Joe Tate, and I have a podcast that takes a look back at my sports broadcast career. It's brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Welcome to another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown in Seville. Joe Tate always tells you, you're never fully dressed until you wear a smile, from Hometown Dental in Seville. There are three of us here in the studio today, Andy Bulbarch, Joe Tate, and Tim Alcorn here in studio. We're going to go back in time here 8 years. The year was 2012, and normally we go back and we talk about some games that Joe would call for the Cavaliers or the Indians, and we've also touched on a wide variety of other subjects, but today we're focusing on a Lorain County High School basketball game that Joe and Tim did together 8 years ago. Joe, great to be joined by you as always. How are you, my friend?
Good, Andy. How are you?
So far, so good. And we've got Tim in studio with us, too, because you guys were, I think this is like a year in the making, right? Going back to this particular game in 2012. Is that right?
Well, thankfully to Joe, every year he would come up and do a high school basketball game on WEOL. So I would generally, when the Cavs schedule came out, late July, early August, I would look for an open date. I didn't even have our schedule put together yet, but I would say, Joe, here's an open night. And then when the schedule was put together on WEOL, we knew that was the game that Joe would be doing. So, yeah, he was so gracious and so nice to do these games every year. And going back to his calling of high school basketball, he used to love to go to the old barns, as Joe would describe them. And, boy, you can't get a more classic old barn than Columbia High School, the small little gym where you sit on the stage. And so Joe and I just had a great time that night.
We did. We did. In fact, I've worked a lot of stages at the high school level over the years. And Monmouth College used to broadcast off a stage there, too, in the old days.
Can you think of the most unique place that you ever called a basketball game? You've told me off air a couple of times some really interesting stories about how you really had to get creative in your college days. As far as basketball goes, because I don't think many have called a game on a stage before, what do you think was the most unique place you ever called a basketball game?
It was the final basketball game played between two arch rival communities, New Boston and Joy in Illinois, out along the Mississippi River. And they were playing their final basketball game. It was a crowd that night, very similar to some of the crowds you and I ran into, Tim, when we did the real arch rivalries. I ended up doing that game on a stepladder because there was no place to sit. The place was just packed. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it was full of people getting ready for the final game. And so they gave me a stepladder, and I climbed up on the stepladder. I put the tape recorder up on the top rung and did the game off the stepladder.
Wow.
These stories are legendary.
Wow.
I love this.
I mean, a stepladder. You probably felt like a volleyball official up on a stepladder.
Just about, I probably looked like one, too.
Well, thankfully, they were able to carve out a spot for you on the stage in Columbia between the Raiders and the Keystone Wildcats in this one, going back to January 27 of 2012. And, you know, I think when you look at these matchups on paper, it's just interesting because when they hear Joe Tate's coming to call the game, they know it's going to be a lot of fun. They know it's going to be really awesome. And Tim, I would imagine that atmosphere was certainly heightened a bit knowing Joe was going to be there.
Oh, no doubt. And to your point, Andy, whenever the schools found out that Joe was coming, that was a very, very special night for them. Legendary NBA Hall of Fame announcer. The coaches, the administrators, the kids, they got excited about it. And usually when Joe was coming, I always tried to pick a real good game, too, just to make sure it was a competitive rivalry type of ball game. And that got the fans all jacked up. But it's funny, Bull, and I'm not saying this just because Joe's sitting right here next to me. The only part of the deal that I had to uphold was to take him to dinner before the game. That was the only part of the contract that Joe made sure I upheld every year. So we would grab some dinner before going over to the gym, and generally when we arrived at the gym, it may be third quarter of the JV game, somewhere in there, and my witness, God is my witness, we would walk into that gym, and you could always hear this murmur go through the crowd, like, there he is. Hey, there he is, you know? And that was always such a cool moment for me. I mean, the murmur was for him, but I just thought, man, the guy's a legend. That's unbelievable, because people were literally waiting for him to get there.
Yeah, and Columbia always treated us very well, too.
Yes, they did. And they still do. Athletic director Jeff Jump and Greg Bancic and all those folks. We love going to Columbia, so it was a fun night.
Even though my wife gave the Columbia basketball team palpitations, but that's another story for another game.
That'll be a future episode. That's a nice little teaser for the next time we have both of you guys here in studio. We're going to dig into the archives and find that one for one of the future episodes here of Over the Timeline. But, you know, I witnessed that firsthand at Columbia last week when I called a football game there. Jeff Jump always treats us very, very well. Now, Joe, for a second, you talked about going back to the old barns, and I know that you really enjoyed calling these high school basketball games, and that's always interesting to hear because for many years you would call games from the Joe Tate perch at, I almost called it Quicken Loans Arena, Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. It's gone through a few different name changes, but even going back to the old Richfield Coliseum, you would call games from some very nice perches in the NBA, so coming back to call games at the high school level isn't something you always hear an NBA announcer say that they're crazy excited about, but I know that this kind of became a routine for you. You really enjoyed going back and doing these games.
I do. It was something that allowed me to kind of let it all hang out a little bit, work with a guy I know so well, and we have a good friendship in addition to our working relationship. So it was therapeutic in many ways to come back and do games with Tim.
Can I tell two very quick stories?
Sure.
I don't know where you are time-wise on this.
Hey, it's a podcast. It's wide open, man. Wide
okay.
open.
First of all, to that point, Joe doing high school basketball games, when I was blessed and fortunate to get the Cavs job, literally a day or two after it was announced, I went to New York for broadcast meetings, literally 48 hours after the announcement was made. And so I got to meet Joe's brethren as far as NBA radio announcers are concerned, and yeah, they just love and worship Joe, and they would ask how he's doing, and they would ask how well I knew Joe. I said, oh, I know him very well, and I would share. You know, every year, Joe would come up and do a high school game with me, and the look of shock on these guys' faces. Joe would do a high school game, and I would say, oh, yeah, and I would tell them about bringing Joe out to dinner, and, you know, we'd walk into these little gyms, and those NBA guys thought that was the coolest thing. I guess Joe wasn't sharing that with his friends in the NBA. We were well aware of it, but they just thought that was so cool that Joe was going out and every year doing a high school game with me. And so that was really fun to share that with the other NBA announcers the first time that I met them. And the second part, you mentioned the Joe Tate perch down at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, which I'm so proud to sit in now. But that wasn't the first Joe Tate perch. The first Joe Tate perch was at another old bandbox of a gym over at Keystone High School. Now, this is a true story, and I've told this one many times. This was Midview at Keystone.
Yes.
Huge rivalry game. They were going for a conference championship. Place was sold out in the old Keystone. I think you could get 500 people in there, if that, right? So the game was on a Friday night. So Thursday, I go out to interview then-head coach Greg Morgan because I knew I wasn't going to do it Friday because Joe and I had to have dinner. So I go out Thursday, a day early. I walk into the gym, and I see the flame from soldering and wood smell, and I look over, and they are constructing, they're constructing a perch on the wall of the gym. So I ask Coach Morgan, I go, what are you doing? He goes, that's for you and Joe tomorrow night. Right? They literally were building a perch.
Wow.
The day before the game. So we arrived the next night. And like I said, the murmur in the crowd. But I think the murmur was, how are those two getting up into that perch?
Well, I tell you, that was like climbing the Alps to go up the side of that wall on that ladder. Wow.
So we had to go up this ladder on the wall to climb into this brand spanking new perch. I don't think OSHA had been there to inspect it yet. And we wormed our way in there, every eye in that gym was on Joe and I, and Joe goes, "Are you going up first?" I said, "No, sir."
Wow.
You are. So that was the first Joe Tate perch.
There was a cable TV outfit that night doing the game, and they, I know, took video of me going up that ladder. So somewhere that video is probably being laughed at periodically at get-togethers by that group.
Yes. We always called it the perch that Tate built. So they literally constructed it for Joe and I 24 hours before the game.
How long ago was this game? Do you remember the year?
Oh, boy.
We talking like 2000s?
Yeah, it's in the 2000s.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Greg Morgan and, of course, our great friend, you know, the late Troy DeFranco was the coach at Midview. And great game. Turned out to be a heck of a game.
Yeah. It really did. The crowd was, boy, they were into it from the moment they stepped out of their cars in the parking lot. Yeah. And that was one of those places where there was not just 6 inches of space.
Right.
Because of the people who were crowded in there.
Yep.
Wow. All right, that sounds like another future podcast.
My
sure.
visual of Joe going up the ladder while I'm down below him, that's one I'm not sure.
We saw a part of me that few have.
Oh, my.
I was going to say, maybe you had to go back and dig out that old stepladder that you used to call the basketball game many years ago, but it sounds like the stepladder may not have done it to get you up to that perch.
No, it was well beyond stepladder range. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick timeout. And when we come back, we're going to play some highlights from this game going all the way back to January 27th, 2012, between Keystone and Columbia here on the Over the Timeline podcast brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.
Hi, I'm Joe Tate, here to tell you about Hometown Dental in Seville. They're my dentist, and they want to be your dentist for life. Hometown Dental offers same-day and evening hours to fit your schedule. And in emergencies like a broken tooth, they can always fit you in. All PPO insurance is accepted, and new patients are welcome. Call Hometown Dental on Center Street in Seville, or online, visit hometowndentalseville.com. You're never fully dressed until you wear a smile.
Welcome back into the Over the Timeline podcast brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. Joe Tate, Tim Alcorn here in studio with Andy Bulbarch, and we are going back in time to 2012. January 27th, a game between Keystone and Columbia, a game that Joe and Tim called together. And one of the cool things I thought, we'll get to the highlights here in just a second, you guys split up the play-by-play. So I think, Tim, if I remember correctly, you took the first and the third quarter. Joe took the second and the fourth, correct?
That is correct. Joe wanted to kind of get a feel for who was who. I would give him a lineup and a roster before the game, you know, obviously maybe a week or two before the game. But still, he wanted just to get a feel, and I understood that. So, of course, the most intimidating part of that was having to take it back in the third quarter after the listeners had heard Joe with that classic rat-a-tat style in the second quarter, and now I got to take it back over in the third. But, yeah, and it always worked out.
I want to play a highlight here, and there's a bunch of them, but my favorite one involves a young man with the last name Shalacy. He had a steal and a score, and you had kind of told me about this whole scenario many, many years ago. I'll never forget the way you set this up, but you set it up way better than I do. So, Tim, I'll give you the opportunity to set this up here with the steal and the score for Shalacy.
Well, Caleb Shalacy was an outstanding athlete for Keystone, not just in basketball, but a great baseball player, in fact. But Shalacy was kind of a big guy, high school basketball size-wise, and so he had a steal. And again, anybody that's been to Columbia, Joe and I and Gary Pelter and I think Jared were up on the stage. So if you can picture the Columbia stage, Keystone was heading our way. They're coming towards the stage. So Shalacy for Keystone had a steal at about the half-court line or somewhere in there, and he starts thundering down our way, and he goes up, and he gives it a slam dunk. And, of course, Joe had the classic call, which we'll hear in a moment. But it was funny because Shalacy, realizing Joe Tate's calling this game, and I'm heading towards him, and I got the dunk, as he turns and runs back the other way, away from the stage, he kind of just looks over his left shoulder and looks at Joe with a big grin on his face like, you better had called that the way I think you should have called that.
Well, let's hear exactly how Joe called that.
Banyas deals it outside. Ball stolen by Shalasi. Drive to the other end. Wham! To the right hand. 51-35.
Now imagine that. You're a high school kid, and you get to hear Joe Tate call your dunk the classic wham with the right hand. And Joe, as always, you nailed it. And I'm not sure if that's going through your mind when you're calling that, but knowing just how cool that is, I'm sure Shalasi is still telling that story to this day that Joe Tate called a slam dunk with the classic wham with the right hand.
You know, there were a lot of attempts. I worked not only with Tim, but I worked with the guys up in Ashtabula and over in Norwalk. So I did a variety of games. And every time somebody thought they could dunk it, that's what they were looking for, was the wham with the right hand. And most of the time, it didn't go the way they wanted it to go.
Clang with the right hand.
That's right. That's right.
He got 9.5 feet off the ground. Just wasn't able to get far enough. Well, there are a couple of highlights I want to play here as well. Some three-pointers as well. And I think both sides here certainly had a great time with this. But let's play some more of these highlights from this game.
Scoops it off. Kolar. Back outside Osborne. He hit one at the buzzer. Three ball to make it 33-19.
So not only did you get a slam dunk, which is kind of rare in a high school game, you also got a buzzer beater as well. You kind of got it all in this game, Joe.
We had some good games. Even when the game didn't turn out to be a nail biter, we had a lot of fun doing it, and it was good. It was therapeutic. I'll guarantee you, it was therapeutic. I think our toughest task, Tim, was a night at Oberlin High School when we had to get the cheerleaders out of the way because they had blocked our view from of the game being played out on the floor.
I do remember that well, Joe. In fact, I remember a few times saying, "Welcome to my world," because yeah. There were some vantage points and there were some broadcast locations that certainly were challenging. But Joe, being the pro that he was always right there to take up the task and never complain. And to your point, Bull, these kids got such a charge out of having Joe Tate there. And he called it like he would call an NBA game. He was prepared. Like I said, he would watch the first quarter just to get a sense as to who was who out there. And then, and I'll tell you what, for me as a broadcaster, the first few times, I mean, that was intimidating. I mean, Joe giving it an NBA-style high school basketball broadcast. But the kids loved it, and there was a cottage industry here at WEOL for a while of all the tapes and then later CDs that went out because all the kids and the coaches wanted those games where Joe was on the call.
And there were some other highlights here I want to play that Joe had in the fourth quarter, I believe, of this game, too. We mentioned there were a few from Keystone. Here's a Columbia highlight from that particular contest.
Gets the ball off on the left side to Brandon Severo. Drives left baseline under the basket. Fights the shot up and in. Severo gets his first basket, and it's 27-14.
You know, one of the things that always blows me away about hearing Joe, so smooth calling basketball games, and it's so smooth, it's almost as if you're listening to a baseball game. That's the crazy part about that, because basketball is so fast, it's action-packed, but, you know, Tim, the way he's able to slow it down and make it sound like you're listening to a baseball game, just amazing to me.
Where did you acquire that skill, Joe? Just to slow it down. That's a great point Bull makes.
That's the way I've always done it, really.
Because sometimes as I hear my highlights back, I think, boy, I'm talking too fast. I'll have to keep that in mind, that you can still slow it down even though the action is quicker. You follow what I'm saying?
And, Tim, we might add that if softball ever resumes at the high school level, why, you and I are a dynamic softball play-by-play.
Oh, absolutely.
Crew.
And again, that was another one, you know, where you can kind of hear the fans and the reaction that Joe Tate's in the house when we were at the Final Four in Akron a couple of years ago.
Yep.
Unfortunately, they didn't have one in 2020, but when we were there in 2019 and the public address announcer made the announcement at Firestone that Joe Tate was there with WEOL, and I get goosebumps. Everybody stood. I mean, Joe Tate got a standing ovation at Firestone that day. So, yeah, we're not done. We're not done, Joe. We got some work to do yet.
And I remember the afternoon at Clyde that it rained. And I got to know the softball team really well.
Yes, we all scampered for cover into the Elyria girls' dugout. And one of the great pictures, I'll treasure it forever, that David Richard took of Joe and I, along with Tim Gebhardt from the Chronicle, and the Elyria girls softball team. They seem to be congregating more towards Joe. You can barely see Joe in the picture as we waited out the thunderstorm in Clyde.
I've got that picture framed and in the den. It's a beauty. It really is.
I'll never forget that day. I had actually done the Keystone game over in Tiffin that afternoon. And somehow, some way, that storm missed us. It did not miss you guys, of course, but I remember driving back from Tiffin and listening to the tail end of the game, and there was like a 3 or 4 minute commercial break, and I thought, oh boy, that's not normal. Something must have happened. And then Joe, with his infinite wisdom, as you guys are wrapping up the post game show, you guys had talked about going down to Akron that next week, and you said, Tim, I think I'll be there, but I'll be sure to check the forecast before I head down there.
Absolutely.
That'll have to be a future episode also to talk about that whole excursion. But I know you guys had a lot of fun doing that. And you know, Joe, I think, too, you know, to go back to the style and the pace of basketball, that's so hard for a lot of guys to pinpoint. But, of course, you know, many years of doing Major League Baseball, I think, you know, I at least can't help but think that has something to do, too, with being able to help slow down the call of the game, which again is so hard to do when it comes to hoops because basketball is inherently just a quick, fast-paced sport. But, you know, I'm not sure if that was kind of something that fed into that as well, the fact that you had called baseball and you'd also called basketball at the highest levels.
Yeah.
Did that have anything to do with it?
I think what really helped was back in the old days at Monmouth and again at Bloomington Normal and again in Terre Haute, Indiana, and Frankfort, Indiana, places that I worked. We did all kinds of sports. We did tennis. We did track and field. We did softball, baseball, football, basketball. So you gave yourself the complete panorama of play-by-play activity. And I guess after a while, it kind of just, you know, molds itself into a style that you can tweak a little bit up or tweak a little bit down. But it basically is the same style dependent upon the game itself.
Yeah, well, and it's crazy when you listen to these high school highlights. And we talked about how Shalacy's probably telling that story for years and years and years. You know, Keystone came out on top in this game, but even a young man like Savarro, I mean, he's probably telling his buddies, you know, I had a nice drive and a score, and Joe Tate called them, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I know in the previous podcast that we've done, I mean, you go back to Joe's early days, his first few years of broadcasting, and I've mentioned the fact that, boy, those guys are now in their 60s, maybe 70s. You know, wouldn't they love to get a hold of these? And maybe they've listened to those podcasts, you know, that Joe would go on to become this NBA Hall of Fame announcer, but when he started, he was calling my game at the high school level. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very cool stuff. And I think the last one you and I did, Joe, we were talking about your demo tape. You know, going all the way back to the late 60s when you were down at OU, down in Athens. And, I mean, can you imagine that, Tim, hearing that particular demo tape? I mean, I think we talked about a baseball game in there. There was a basketball game. There was a football game in there where you were actually calling the game from one of your more unusual perches over in Lawrence, Kansas, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, it provided a great basic training for what came later. And, you know, I enjoy it all. And if you just give yourself enough time to prepare, which is one of the great things about Tim, is he never goes into a broadcast not prepared. And it shows up every time he turns on the microphone.
And he's got all of his sheets saved from these games. That's why we've developed the Alcorn Archive also, because not only do we have the highlights, but Tim's actually got all of his score sheets and his depth chart saved. And that's what makes that whole process so much easier. And that's kind of something you got from Joe, right?
I did. Much to Diane's chagrin, do I have all those score sheets and depth chart saved. But no, and it's so much fun to go back and just kind of look at those once in a while and remember some of those names and some of those great games. I don't know if anybody will ever want them, but it's fun for me, and I enjoy the history of it and, you know, just those memories that it brings back. Because really, in the end, to me, that's what sports is all about. I mean, It's the memories and the relationships. I mean, games here or there and so forth, sure. But it's all those memories that were created. And those are so special.
Joe, do you save your old score sheets? Do you have a lot of yours saved? I know Tim's got booklets of them, but do you have yours
I
saved?
I gave them to Tim.
Okay.
Much to Diane's chagrin.
Oh, boy.
I've got mine, and I've got Joe's. So.
In fact, when we're done here, I'm going to inform Tim that I have 30 years of Mount Union football television tapes, which I'd love to be able to give to him. In fact, I'll give him a VHS recorder so he can watch them, for that matter.
Wow. 3 decades of Mount Union football. Yep. Well, you've got the Karras's pretty well covered, don't you?
I got him right from the day he started as head coach. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Well, and I'm not sure if it was after this game or if this was after a game a little bit later on down the road, but you guys did a cool exchange, too, where you guys would sign each other's score sheets. Isn't that right?
That Columbia Keystone game that you're talking about with the Shalacy dunk, I'm getting goosebumps. I have that score sheet from Joe. He signed it only because he wanted me to sign his. And I was like, what? And he goes, nope. Timothy, I want you to sign it. So I signed his score sheet. I go, well, if I'm signing yours, you're signing mine. So I do have that.
Well, Diane can't yell at you for that.
That,
you've got
that one
like
she's
that
okay
says.
With. Yeah. That one she's okay
but
with.
He still bought supper.
Hey, that's all part of the deal. That's all part of the deal. Well, good stuff. Guys, this is a lot of fun. A really cool trip down memory lane. And I know that was only 8 years ago, but I'm sure there are times where it feels like it was just yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a special night being up on that stage. And as I said, every year Joe could come out. Somewhere I do have a list of all the different games that Joe did with me. I don't know why I compiled it, but I have a list. And I'd love to go back through those games and relive some of all those memories. Joe brought up a few of them, but there's so many, and you know, each one had its own special, unique flavor. And again, it was so, so special for the kids, really. It was special for the kids and the coaches to have Hall of Fame announcer Joe Tate in their gym. It was really cool.
And well, it was special for me too, Andy.
I believe that. And the next time that we have you call a game, I'll see if we can get our best carpenters to work to build a perch for you. And if nothing else, maybe they could build like a personalized stepladder.
There you go.
Joe,
it'll never top the original.
Oh,
I'll tell
that's
you.
Right.
Maybe we'll even get you like a volleyball referee. We'll get you like a zebra shirt to go up there also.
There you go.
Good stuff. Well, Joe, Tim, thank you guys again. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you.
That's going to put the wraps on another edition of the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville. Joe Tate always tells you, you're never fully dressed until you wear a smile from Hometown Dental in Seville. For Joe Tate and Tim Alcorn, this is Andy Bulbarch saying thank you again for listening to the Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Hometown Dental in Seville.